faith, spiritual values, moral issues, government, economy, education, work, responsibility. What we think about these depends on our worldview. Now, VCY America presents Worldview Weekend Radio with Brannon House.
Welcome. Glad you're with us. We're going to be joined today by Dr. Peter Vincent Pry for an update on what's happening with Russia and Ukraine and NATO. And then we'll be joined about the 30-minute mark, about 1:30 Central Time, by Carl Tykrib. As many of you know, Carl's been also, like Dr. Pry, a longtime guest. Carl, as you know, and for new folks, Carl lives, born and raised in Canada. I just talked to him a while ago. He said it's been a very busy morning trying to figure out where this is all going, what is happening to his country. Emergency powers last night were affirmed in the House of Commons while I was on the air with Carl, 185 to 150. They approved, in effect, emergency powers till at least the middle of March for Canada, virtually martial law. Martial law. They're freezing bank accounts of people. I read a story of one lady who is a single mother who contributed $50 to the Freedom Convoy, and her bank account was frozen, seized. She's a single mother. What did she do that was illegal, folks? She contributed to a freedom movement, a peaceful freedom movement, and now her bank account has been frozen. Perhaps some of you have seen the article out today with an interview by Rand Paul, U.S. Senator Rand Paul, stating that the emergency powers that Biden holds, he could do the exact same thing here in America. Well, are they really just setting this up? Because they've already had the Department of Homeland Security come out a week ago and say that if you put out disinformation and misinformation, you could be a domestic terrorist. So are they already setting the narrative for what's happening in Canada to happen in America? We'll talk with Carl Tykrib about the 1:30 Central Time mark. But first, joining me is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, Chief of Staff of the Congressional EMP Commission. He heads up the EMP Task Force. He's the author of numerous books. His most recent one is Blackout Warfare. It's a beautiful hardcover book endorsed by many people from the intelligence community, Blackout Warfare. You'll find it along with all his other books when you put his name, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, into a search engine at Amazon. All his books will pop up. And you should check them out because he's kind of been the lone voice in the wilderness trying to warn us about the threat of not only EMP, but cyber hacking and other issues related to the new way of warfare. As you remember, he was the one that alerted us to the Vostok 18 military exercises between Russia and China in 2018 that were said to be the largest military exercise in world history. And Dr. Pry warned that the week before that, they were involved in things like Operation Dragonfly and others hacking on our infrastructure here in America, the new way of warfare. You'll also remember, as he's in my documentary Siege, that he warned that they, China and Russia, during that exercise, were practicing not only cyber attacks, but they, through Operation Dragonfly, he thought, but also practicing a nuclear strike on America and NATO. Remember that in the documentary Siege at siegethemovie.com? Practicing a nuclear strike on NATO and America. Well, here we are, 2022. That documentary was released December 2019. So here we are, February 2022, folks. And now you're understanding why he was giving that warning. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, welcome back to the broadcast. Thank you for joining us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me, Brannon.
Well, your phone is ringing off the hook. I know that, and people are wanting interviews from you. You're a historian. You understand nuclear weapons. You understand the new way of warfare. You understand all of these things. And so as you bring this picture together and you give interviews, more and more people are, of course, you're writing articles are being published in the Washington Times, Newsmax, other places. So I know your phone's ringing off the hook. So thank you for making time for us today. Dr. Pry, tell us about the latest. Give us an update about what's happening in Ukraine, two areas that Putin is claiming there, and where you think this is all going?
Well, yeah, the those areas in eastern Ukraine, Luhansk and Donetsk, which have been recognized by the Russian Duma now as independent republics, this is an interim step toward Russia. Taking those areas over, Putin has ordered the military in to to supposedly for peacekeeping purposes, but basically he's taking over that part of Ukraine to make it part of Russia. It hasn't been really part of Ukraine, not under control by the Ukrainian government for about 8 years now. Russia has been conducting a clandestine war with special forces and arming Ukrainian separatists in that part of Ukraine. So this is his his next step, where he's actually invaded Ukraine and taken over that part of the country. The big invasion hasn't happened yet. You know, still has, I guess the latest estimate is 190,000 troops massed on three sides of the country. And he hasn't crossed the border of the part of Ukraine that is still under the control of the Ukrainian government and taken that over. And what I think is going on, I mean, there's three ways that Putin could play this. And it looks like what he's doing, his ultimate target is not just Ukraine. I mean, Ukraine is considered a vital strategic interest to Russia for a mix of legitimate defensive concerns and illegitimate aggressive designs. While Americans and people in the West find it hard to credit the idea that Russia could feel threatened by NATO, Russia is strategically paranoid. They have a long, bloody history of being invaded many times from the West, from the East, from the South, from all directions but the North. Well, I guess if you include the Vikings, they've been invaded by the north from the northern direction, too. In contrast to the experience we've had here in America, where the bloodiest war we've been involved in was a self-inflicted war more than 150 years ago in the Civil War, we have not had our country invaded or suffered the way Russia has suffered. They lost 20 to 30 million dead. That's not all the casualties. That's fatalities in World War II, liberating these areas from Nazi Germany, Ukraine, and the countries that had constituted the Warsaw Pact, so they could have defensive depth, so they would be able to better defend themselves from future threats from the West. And if Ukraine were to join NATO, this would if NATO deployed armies and missiles and air forces to eastern Ukraine, the area that Putin has now taken over, it would put us within 300 miles of Moscow, the capital, easy striking distance for a surprise attack. And I know, again, people in the West, Americans, say we don't do Pearl Harbors. We are not an aggressive kind of a person. If you look at the balance of power between NATO and Russia, it's absurd that we would pose an invasion threat to them. But again, when you consider Russia's long history, they see threats everywhere. And so Ukraine joining NATO is unacceptable to them. That's a legitimate defensive interest they have in that respect. And the illegitimate part is that Russia doesn't want just defense. It's part of Ukraine's, it's part of Putin's plan to reconstitute the former territories of the USSR into Russia, to create a new Russian empire. And Ukraine is a really important part of that plan. Moreover, if Russia takes over all of Ukraine, I think it's inevitable that they're going to absorb the whole of Ukraine eventually.
Oh, you do?
Maybe very soon. Very soon.
Really?
They want to put armies and air forces and missiles in western Ukraine, so that they'll be right on the Polish border between Belarus and Ukraine. And Belarus, for all practical purposes, is part of Russia. Belarus does whatever Russia tells them to do. They're participating in this aggressive threat to Ukrainian sovereignty. They have Russian armies, and the Belarusian armies are prepared to go in on Ukraine. But this would pose a steel spearhead if they sent Russian forces into western Ukraine. They would reconstitute the kind of threat that the Soviet Union posed to NATO during the Cold War, a steel spearhead that could knife through the NATO member states to the English Channel. And NATO is much weaker today than it was during the Cold War. You know, Russia, to just give one example, has got 20,000 main battle tanks. You know, Germany has downsized its army, so they only have 480 main battle tanks in all of Germany. The United States, during the Obama administration, withdrew all of our main battle tanks. Trump started reintroducing some, but we still only have about 100 main battle tanks, you know, so in Western Europe. So that's part of his design, to pose not just to have defensive depth for Russia, but to be able to pose an offensive threat. Now, will he go in now at this time? Do you want me to keep going?
Yeah.
Absolutely
keep going. But I do want to get to the headline of your article in the Washington Times, The Doom of NATO, and maybe explain to our audience what the acronym for NATO is, because, again, we're always adding a lot of new people, and we're adding young people. And as you know, Dr. Pryor, they don't teach this to kids in school. So a lot of our younger audience probably doesn't even know what NATO is.
Okay, NATO is the North Atlantic Treaty Organization. And the United States belongs to NATO, and then most of the European countries of Europe belong to NATO, and it keeps including more and more countries. And at the end of the Cold War, NATO decided to expand eastward so that countries that used to be the enemies of NATO, Poland, Hungary, Romania, these countries had belonged to the Warsaw Pact. Some of these countries belonged to the former USSR, the Baltic states, for example, Lithuania, Latvia, Estonia. And all of these countries feared communism so much because they had lived under the tyranny of communism during the Soviet Union that they were desperate to join NATO. I personally met with the leaders of many of these countries before they came into NATO to hear their appeal to the United States. They were very hopeful, desperate to join NATO, so that NATO, which basically comes down to the United States, because the United States is the strongest NATO member and spends the most money, and we have the greatest, you know, military capabilities in all of NATO. So, in effect, NATO depends upon the United States to be the global policeman, you know, to provide for their security. But I advised the Congress back in those days, you know, many years ago during the Bush administration, that it would be unwise for the United States to expand NATO eastward to include these former territories of the Soviet Union, to include former Warsaw Pact countries, because our main objective should have been to try to make Russia a strategic partner, to try to draw them into the Western community of nations. Because of their paranoia and their paranoid strategic culture, that if we wanted to have a new Cold War with Russia, a Russia that had a revanchist attitude and was the most powerful nuclear state in the world, then we should expand NATO eastward. And that's what we did. And the last straw for Russia was the idea that we were going to bring Ukraine into NATO. Now, the West has said we don't have any immediate plans to bring Ukraine into NATO, but they're a Partnership for Peace member, which is an interim step toward becoming a member of NATO. And so that's one of the reasons all of this is happening.
There's another reason
it's happening, the bigger reason, because all of this is not about Ukraine.
Hold right there, Dr. Pryor. Come back. We'll find out the next piece, why this is really all happening. He says it's not about Ukraine. We'll find out why it's happening. Could it lead to World War III? Dr. Pryor, next. My guest is Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. If you go to Amazon, put in Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, hit return, you'll find all his mini books. His most recent is a beautiful hardcover, Blackout Warfare. And he's an expert on many things, nuclear weapons, EMP. In fact, if you go to the Spy Museum in the nation's capital, you will see a nuclear suitcase, and it says next to it, Dr. Peter Pry. He did the research behind that in the mock-up of that was presented in a committee before, you know, a congressional committee. So he has quite the background, folks. If you were to research him more, you'll see how elaborate his bio is and his background. And again, I hope you will go to Amazon.com, type in Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, order some of his books, and get up to speed on what he's talking about, and also support his great work and great research by purchasing those books. So you're not only helping yourself and getting informed, but you're also continuing to help him put out the research for all of us that we need to also be giving to our elected officials to understand how dire the situation is. And he's been warning about this for a long time, and it is falling on deaf ears of many, and that's why we, the people, need to make sure we're educated and holding our officials accountable the best we can about these existential threats to our nation, to our very life, saving infrastructure, such as the power grid. Because as he will tell you, the studies have been done. If there were an EMP strike, it could take the grid down for a year. Well, within a year, you'd have about 90% of the population dead from disease, starvation, and societal unrest. So very, very crucial issues. Dr. Pry, before the break, you said the one issue is, of course, we have put Ukraine into the interim step, become part of NATO. Russia doesn't want that because they don't want NATO missiles and whatnot that close to their nation. They want a little bit of a buffer. And so this is one reason, but you said the bigger reason. What is, you're getting into the bigger reason before the break, so I'll let you pick it up.
Well, right, I also mentioned that they wanted Ukraine so they could pose an offensive threat to the NATO alliance, reconstitute the kind of threat they had during the Cold War by putting their armies and missiles and air forces into Western Ukraine. Between Western Ukraine and Belarus, that would put Russia in direct contact with Poland across the whole eastern Polish border, so they could pose a threat to overrun NATO from the east the way they did during the Cold War, and possibly win the new Cold War without actually having to do the invasion, because the NATO member states are so afraid of another war with Russia that NATO is already starting to come apart at the seams over the Ukrainian crisis, which is the larger objective. Putin doesn't want to just take over Ukrainian territory and reconstitute a new Russian empire like the USSR, but he wants to destroy NATO, and he might be able to do it without war. Because Germany, to give an example, Germany isn't alone, but Germany has broken with the Biden administration over arming Ukraine. Germany refuses to send arms to Ukraine. And as do some of the other NATO member states who are really getting nervous about the stoking war in Ukraine. And why is that? The mainstream explanation, the Biden administration explanation, and the Biden administration and a lot of the NATO allies have been beating up on Germany for not sending arms to Ukraine, is that, oh, it's because Ukraine is dependent on Russian petroleum and natural gas. And that is part of the reason, but the real reason that nobody talks about in the mainstream is that Germany is aware that in the last century it was on the losing side of two world wars. Germany knows what it's like to fight a war against Russia. Germany remembers its destroyed cities, the rapes, the loss of 5 to 7 million people in World War II. And all the countries of European NATO remember that. None of them want another big war on the continent of Europe like that. None of them are interested in poking the bear, you know, to have this happen. And this is one of the other reasons why I recommended against expanding NATO eastward, because we do not have the military power to defend those countries except by the use of nuclear weapons. You know, if you look at the numbers of troops that Biden has sent to Eastern Europe, there's probably about 10,000 troops stretched across in penny packets across that enormous frontier. And that's a trivial amount of troops. The only reason they're there is really to serve as a nuclear tripwire to warn off Russia. But would we actually use tactical nuclear weapons or strategic nuclear weapons to stop Russia from invading NATO? I don't think we would. In the end of the day, hopefully we wouldn't, because it isn't in the interests of America to get in a nuclear war with Russia to protect the sovereignty of Latvia or Lithuania or Slovakia or the Czech Republic, countries that most Americans can't even find on a map. And Putin is challenging that bluff, basically, by going into Ukraine. And the NATO alliance is coming apart at the seams. I think he may want to stretch this crisis out, over a long period of time, because the longer the crisis lasts, and the closer the European NATO member states feel we're getting to a real war with Russia, the alliance is fracturing toward disintegration. In the end, he might be able to destroy NATO. I mean, NATO would continue in name only at the end of all of this, but all of the NATO member states will have lost confidence in themselves and in the United States as their protector, and that would constitute the destruction of NATO, and that's one of the things that Putin is after. In fact, because Russia is also allied with China, it could even become the basis, if the U.S. credibility is destroyed sufficiently, and it's well on the way being destroyed, that you could face a new world order out of this crisis that's led by Russia and China, because they have the military strength and they have the political will to use violence to achieve their goals, whereas the West, pays all kinds of lip service to sovereignty and protecting democracy and all of that, but it doesn't have the capability to defend it or the political will to defend it. And I have not, and I don't even advocate, I mean Washington, I don't even advocate that we should be defending, quote-unquote, democracy in Ukraine. We have problems enough at home. We should be defending democracy in America first. And we don't have any strategic interests. Ukrainian democracy is not a vital U.S. strategic interest. If we had followed through with what Ronald Reagan and the first George Bush wanted to do and made Russia a strategic partner in the new Cold War against China, that would have done more to protect Ukrainian sovereignty than what we're doing now. Putin, I think, was actually waiting. I think he's smart enough to understand that China is a bigger threat to Russia than the West is in the long run. He has more to fear from China, an invasion of China into Siberia, for example, than he does from the West. And I think Putin was waiting during the Trump administration for Trump to hit the reset button and form a strategic partnership with Russia. The president, unfortunately, wasn't able to do that because the Democrats used all this propaganda about Trump being Putin's puppet and that Trump was elected only because of Russian help, all of which was a lie. But it made it impossible politically for President Trump to hit the reset button with Russia. And that might have been our doom. The failure to do that, continue to go for the Biden administration to continue to go down this road of Russia, 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 as if it's not possible to reconcile our differences, is getting us into a situation, a World War III that we cannot win. The United States has never faced a more powerful bloc. The West, the free world, as it used to be called, has never faced a more powerful bloc than Russia, China, North Korea, and Iran, and the international terrorists that work for Iran, than we face now. Even though little North Korea, with its ICBMs, is more of a threat to us than Nazi Germany and Imperial Japan were, because those countries didn't have hydrogen bombs that could reach anywhere in America, as North Korea does.
And particularly when we've got Iran threatening us with strikes inside our border, and we're getting reports from federal trials, as well as now from people like Todd Bensman, telling us that indeed there are Hezbollah terror cells here in the U.S. And Iran saying we can threaten, we would attack you from within recently, of course. So you're right. We got to think about that red-green axis that you're talking about. Let me ask you, Dr. Pry, about the average American. How does this, people say, okay, Dr. Pry's right. We don't have any interest over there. We shouldn't be over there defending their borders in Ukraine. We should be defending our borders. So how could this impact us in the United States, particularly the lower 48, let's say, with Russia? What could Russia do to retaliate against America, particularly now we see that there's going to be some sanctions, these sanctions coming on to Putin? What is Putin likely to do with these sanctions that could, you know, how would it affect the average American in their daily life?
Well, the Russian general staff is a big believer, not just in retaliation, but in launching preemptive first strikes so that they, to stop a nation that's trying to harm them in the first place. And the I keep thinking about how World War I escalated from a single bullet shot into the chest of Archduke Ferdinand of the Austro-Hungarian Empire, a single bullet fired by a Serb terrorist, unexpectedly and rapidly escalated into World War I, that 4 years later cost 40 million casualties. You know, the Ukraine is the new powder keg of Europe, the way Serbia was back in 1914, except it's a much bigger and more potentially explosive powder keg, because Russian strategic interests are wrapped up in this thing so much. You know, the Russians... and by the way, the sanctions that Biden has been talking about, he's obviously afraid, and it's good that he's afraid, to impose serious sanctions. So far, they're pretty much symbolic. The sanctions he's applied are on the two breakaway republics in eastern Ukraine, not on Russia yet, okay? So maybe somebody in the Biden administration understands that the United States could be destroyed by this new way of warfare. You know, Russia could make cyber attacks to shut down our electric grid, make an EMP attack to shut down our electric grid. In my article, The Doom of NATO, this new way of warfare could be applied if they use a single EMP warhead, a super EMP warhead, detonated 70 kilometers high over Brussels, where NATO headquarters is located. It would black out electric grids from Ireland all the way to Poland, and a red carpet for Russia to just roll to the English Channel if it wanted to do that. That would be the doom of NATO in a very literal military sense, not the earlier sense that I was talking about, where he could fracture NATO politically, by destroying the credibility. He could do that too. But Russia's in a position where it could militarily defeat NATO very easily by using this new way of warfare. You know, when the electric grids go down, you can't fuel the tanks. You can't fuel your fighter aircraft. They may not even work because their electronics will be fried. So how do you fight the invader when something like that has happened? That could happen to European NATO. It could happen to us. Because just like in World War I, military planners and general staffs always think of the worst-case scenario, and they try to prevent that worst-case scenario from happening, usually through preemptive action. That's what happened with World War One escalating out of control. You know, when the Austro-Hungarians mobilized their armies to punish Serbia, Russia mobilized its armies. I'm talking about back in 1914, you know, to protect their little Slavic brother, Serbia. And because Germany was allied to Austro-Hungary, they mobilized their army. Then France mobilized and Britain mobilized, and that's what started World War One. From a very local incident, a single bullet fired by a terrorist, our general staffs thought through, well, what's the worst that could happen? You know, well, maybe Austro-Hungary is going to take over my Serbian ally. I'd better be prepared to go to war with them to stop them from doing that. Likewise, the Russian general staff today, you know, thinking about the Biden plan.
Hold right there. We'll have Dr. Pry wrap it up right there and come back to Carl Tycrib. Don't go away, folks. All right, welcome back. Glad you're with us. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, my guest. We're going to wrap it up with him, and then we're going to be joined by Carl Tykrib, born and raised in Canada. I've been having conversations with him the last couple of days. He was with me last night, and quite frankly, you probably are going to hear it in his voice, but you're certainly going to hear it in his talk. They're quite rattled up there in Canada. They have no clue what's going to happen next, and this is not... Well, can you imagine this happening in America? Can you imagine declaring a national martial law and seizing the bank accounts of conservatives that support conservative organizations, freedom organizations, Christian organizations, patriot organizations, you know, and you start finding about single moms having their bank accounts frozen because they gave $50 to a freedom organization. This is what's happening in Canada. And so you got to get this update from him, and we're going to do that. But first, we need to wrap it up with Dr. Pry. So, Dr. Pry, finish what you were saying before the break, please, before we had to go to that quick break.
Well, I'm saying what I'm trying to say in my long-winded way is that the Ukrainian crisis of 2022 is even worse, potentially, than the crisis over Serbia in 1914 that started World War I. The escalatory possibilities are limitless. If Russia takes seriously Biden's and NATO's saber-rattling, we, for example, have flown B-52s to England as part of this. B-52 bombers, that's a strategic nuclear bomber. You know, the Russian general staff, in their paranoia, could say, maybe the United States is planning tactical nuclear strikes. Since they don't have the conventional power to defeat us, maybe we'd better preempt the United States. Preempt European NATO, make strikes on European NATO, make strikes on the U.S. homeland so that the United States cannot intervene and cannot hit us first.
Wow.
We've been surprised many times in our history. We're going to be the ones to surprise them. And that's what's in their military doctrine. That's the way they would fight this new way of warfare.
So
preempt us with cyber attacks, preempt us with EMP attacks. If necessary, preempt us by making nuclear strikes that blow up our missile silos and bomber bases. It could get that bad.
So this is a very dangerous time in American history and world history.
Yes, absolutely. We're on the precipice here. This could be 1914 all over again. And unfortunately, the political military leaders we have on our side right now are not smart enough to see that and to understand that. You know, they're exactly the kind of dummies that could lead us over the cliff.
Yep. And then in conclusion, Dr. Pry, you said you do expect Putin eventually will take Ukraine. So it sounds like this is all inevitable.
Yes, I think Putin has to incorporate Ukraine. If he wants to reconstitute the former territories of the USSR, which is his aspiration, and establish a new Russian empire, and it's too dangerous for Russia also, from their perspective, to leave Ukraine independent. And the way they're doing it shows a contempt for the West and a lack of respect for us, because they're doing it in slow motion. You know, it's a scenario where, I mean, if you think of it's a scenario, in effect, they're saying, you know, we're planning to take Ukraine. We're doing it right in front of your face. You had weeks and weeks to do something. Go ahead and do your worst. We're going to take it anyway. And we're going to do it slow, at least it's starting off initially, okay? And that's another way of undermining the credibility of the West and shattering the NATO alliance. It shows, I mean, basically, it's a worst-case scenario. If Russia had taken Ukraine the way it took Crimea by surprise, without us having any strategic warning, in a way, that kind of saves our credibility a little. Oh, we weren't ready for it. They took it by surprise. But this time, they don't care. They're doing it right in front of our face. That suggests that maybe they have Biden's number and realize and have no fear of anything that NATO can do, or no fear of anything the United States can do, that they are prepared to preempt, they're prepared to take the worst that we could throw at them and win. And that's consistent with the strategy that Putin appears to be following, where he has sacrificed strategic and tactical surprise for the slow crucifixion of Ukraine right in front of the face of the Western world, despite all of our protests and threats.
Wow. Dr. Pry, thank you so much. And I do hope people will go to Amazon.com, type in Dr. Peter Vincent Pry, look at all the numerous books he's written, including his most recent one, a beautiful hardcover, endorsed and participated with major people in the intelligence arena, Blackout Warfare. But you'll see all of his books. And you not only do you need this information, folks, but you're also able to support his excellent work when you purchase those books. So everybody's winning when you take a look at his resources that he offers under his name, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. Dr. Pry, as always, I know you're in great demand, particularly since you're excellent article, The Doom of NATO, came out in the Washington Times. You also are the one that holds the record for the most guest appearances on Mark Levin's show. So you're gaining in popularity, and we always are thankful when you make time for us.
Well, thank you so much for having me again, Brandon, in these dangerous times.
Well, we'll be having you back. Thank you, Dr. Pry. Be safe.
Bye-bye. Thank you.
Dr. Peter Vincent Pry checking in with us. Wow. Wow, wow, wow. All right, let's move quickly to Carl Tykrib. He is, of course, no stranger to our alumni. He's been a guest on this show many times, spoken at our conference in the Ozarks. He's born and raised in Canada. He's an expert on globalism. He's an expert on the World Economic Forum as well. He wrote a book called Game of Gods. Game of Gods. And of course, it's playing out just as he said. And we had the opportunity on TV last night to play for him the audio clip of the Israeli scientist talking about hacking human life. And it's no longer about the soul. It's no longer about free will. We're going to hack your life, and we're going to then have you evolve through the intelligent design, the intelligent design being that of the global elite, who hack your body and then control how you think and behave. He went on to declare that when we see the coronavirus, we will look back and see that it is a new regime of surveillance under the skin. Carl had never heard those until last night, but it fits right with his book, Game of Gods, where he predicted just what the guy said. He says, as you've heard it, folks, in the clips before, it's no longer the God above the clouds, but it'll be the elite who operate everything from the IBM cloud, the Microsoft cloud, where they control human behavior and life. Transhumanism. Joining me now is Carl Tykrib from Canada. Carl, thank you for joining us on our 60 stations today.
Yeah, you bet, Brandon. Thank you for having me on this afternoon.
Give us an update. What's going on in Canada, and what is the mood in Canada today?
Well, you know, right now there's a lot of questions being asked. A lot of people, just independent people, are wondering, how will this affect me personally? I've had phone calls today from people who are concerned about their own finances. They hold conservative views, they hold Christian views, they are in support of the convoy, whether they support it financially or just simply in the perspective. Either way, they are certainly concerned that they may be targeted because of their beliefs, because of their position. What's interesting, Brandon, with what is happening with the Emergency Act, is it is in many respects a way of Justin Trudeau being able to squash political opposition. Cultural opposition, the opposition that would primarily come from Western Canada, but also from other parts of the nation as well. People aren't happy. And this is one very effective way of keeping himself in charge. Now, as it stands, the Premier of Alberta, Jason Kenney, and also the Premier of Saskatchewan, Scott Moe, have both made it public that they are pursuing legal action against the federal government. They're looking to put court orders in place. We'll see where that goes. My own premier of my province, she has said so far, from what I can see, nothing. And there kind of seems to be a sense of just wondering, where are things going to be going? Probably in terms of the drama around the convoy, Tamara Leake, who was the fundraiser organizer and definitely the person probably most involved in organizing and just spearheading the entire movement, she was arrested a few days ago, as people know, in this country. And today she was went before the judge, and the judge dismissed her ability to be released on bail, which is really remarkable. Because in Canada, my goodness, if you're a murderer or a rapist or a pedophile, or if you are the driver of a vehicle who is anti-protest, and this happened a couple of weeks ago in Winnipeg, who ran over four of the freedom protesters and engaged in a hit-and-run action and was subsequently arrested. He was allowed out on bail. She, however, is not. And what's remarkable about that is the judge, the presiding judge over her a bail hearing, ran as a Liberal government candidate back in, I believe, 2011. So that itself should be massive red flags. This is a political move. And in many respects, we're seeing our country right now really up in the air in terms of where all of this is going to go.
Well, I read an article this morning about, and I mentioned to the audience, but I want you to hear it as well, a single mother that offered up $50 in donation online to the Truckers Freedom Movement, and I'm reading reports now online that she's had her bank account frozen. Are you hearing reports like this?
Yeah, I have heard reports like this. It's hard to nail down exactly what's going on that way. Definitely there are people whose accounts have been frozen, quite a few people who've had accounts frozen. I personally know one person whose account is frozen, and he's stuck in Ottawa. His truck was seized. He has no financial ability to be able to operate. He can't, from what I understand, he can't leave Ottawa legally because he has to go before the court. But they don't give him, he's got no place to go. And so I understand a church has been helping him, trying to give him some support, and then others in our area here, because he's from this region,
has
been reaching out to try to offer support too. So the implications are, really the implications are monumental. And then I really appreciated, Brandon, your previous speaker, dealing on the issue of NATO and Ukraine and Russia and the West. Boy, he was spot on, and it really hit me as he was describing our Western situation, where my country's leader, Justin Trudeau, and our Western government, your government under Joe Biden, both countries, yours and mine, are NATO members. We are foundational members of the NATO alliance. We are weak. We are internally, leadership, governance, weak. And this is a very, very troubling scenario.
Well, we're not only weak, but Trudeau has praised China, the form of government, the dictatorship. He's praised China. He's praised Castro. He's likely the illegitimate child of Castro, according to many. By the way, what do you think of that?
You know, I would actually have to probably be on the same page that way, though there is no proof except Justin's mother was well-known, let's put it that way.
Okay. So
well-known, and there was a significant family connection. There's a very significant relationship between Trudeau, the Trudeau family, and Castro.
So
that absolutely is without question.
So there's not only the love of communism, apparently, by Trudeau, a would-be dictator, a love of China, a love of communism, Castro. Then you have Biden, who's bought and paid for, apparently, by China through his son, the bagman. And so we're now dealing with enemies foreign and domestic. But if you say that, that makes you the domestic terrorist.
I know, and that's the language that's being spewed out by the Liberal government, and it has been ever since the trucks began rumbling towards Ottawa. The language always has been hostile, confrontational. First of all, the language was denial. It's not really serious. They don't pose a real threat. They're not really a force to be reckoned with. And then when they did arrive, they were all Nazis and Confederate flag wavers and racists and misogynists and evil and terrorists. The language was harsh and vile. A real leader would have stepped out and said, I am actually supposed to represent you. You represent farmers and truckers. You represent the average
working... Hold right there. Hold right there, Carl. Be right back. With us, Worldview Radio, our website, worldviewradio.com, worldviewradio.com. My guest is Carl Tykrib. His website is forcingchange.org, right, Carl?
That's right. Forcingchange.org is where you can go back and go through all the back issues of our Forcing Change magazine, which we ran from 2007 to 2015, and then access articles and other reports. It's a free site and requires a password, but that's all easy to set up and gives you access to a mountain of materials that you can use in terms of your own research. My book's website is gameofgods.ca.
Gameofgods.ca. Gameofgods.ca. So let's talk a little bit, as we did yesterday, and then I did on this show, about the World Economic Forum. I want your take on this, because it seems as though the Board of Trustees, and we see the Board of Trustees are made up of Mark Carney of the United Nations, your Deputy Prime Minister and Minister of Finance, Chrystia Freeland, who's the one that said we're going to seize bank accounts without due process or doing that. Al Gore, you've got the Managing Director of the International Monetary Fund. These are the Board of Trustees of the World Economic Forum. Then you add in all their partners that we talked about, big tech, big business, big pharma. It seems like this is it. This is the group that's driving this whole thing, took the coronavirus, planned it, released it, work together for lockdowns, work together to destroy the free market system, work together to, do what they could to create collapse, because the great collapse is necessary for the great reset, I've been saying. And then I hear people like the former executive with BlackRock saying on audio and video that these measures are the same measures that will be used to control the population when the global economy collapses. When the global economy collapses and there's civil unrest and everything, they will already have control of everybody and everything. What are your thoughts?
Well, the World Economic Forum acts as a bridge. There's a whole other set of players that often kind of get, it's not that they're overlooked, it's that they're there. And they're there with such a large presence, we almost take it for granted. And that is the United Nations, various UN specialized agencies like the World Health Organization, other international organizations and institutions that are of like mind, beyond just simply the corporate side. Then we also have heads of state. We have entire governmental offices, heads of state, who have partnered with the World Economic Forum, the European Commission being one regional representation. The government of China, I mean, my goodness, when I was monitoring the World Economic Forum's Davos agenda back a few weeks, the very first person speaking was the leader of China. He was given a keynote presentation, and he set the tone for the event. And so what the World Economic Forum does is it bridges the United Nations, the UN Sustainable Development Goals, it bridges the World Health Organization, it bridges all of these international institutions, it bridges them with national governments, with corporate players, with financial institutions. It acts as an ecosystem that allows all of these to come together. There's a reason why when Klaus Schwab started this organization, back in the 1970s, it was then called the European Management Forum. Mm. And while that word is gone, it is essentially the same thing. Let's replace with what it really should be, the World Management Forum. That's, Brandon, what this is all about. And you need to have a hub group, some group that allows the free exchange of these ideas, the revolving door between governance, banking, tech, even the lobbyist side. The World Economic Forum acts as that ecosystem.
Talk to me, Carl, in the remaining 4 minutes. Talk to me as a Christian on this topic. I mean, you have been, but now bring in the Bible. Bring in eschatology. Bring in end time. How is this all setting things up? How should we be thinking about this as Christians?
Great question. I had an email sent to me just today asking the question, and it's a great question. Why as Christians should we be concerned about global governance? Well, in other words, what's the real issue? What's the real point? Well, there's a few things. Number one, just from a let's just call it a purely secularist way of thinking,
We don't want centralized governance. The larger and more centralized the governance structure is, the less we can affect real change, the less that we can bring our voices to bear. In other words, if you have a dictatorship, it's bad enough to have it in one country. It's even worse when we have it within some type of a global network of soft tyrannies and hard dictatorships. So on that level alone, no thank you. I think in terms of even taking it down to its essence, what we are really seeing is man's attempt to say, we will build heaven on earth, we will build our Babel, versus the biblical message that is through Christ and Christ alone. This is, in my view, and I have been repeatedly hitting on this banner because it's so important, the world is offering literally an alternative salvation message. We will manage our way into heaven on earth. And it always becomes a bloody utopian nightmare. That's the story of history versus what Jesus Christ is offering, saying it is my way, not your way. And at some point, just as in the Genesis story of the Tower of Babel, at some point God himself has to intervene. That's his timing. That will be, with his timetable. But with that comes judgment and also grace, setting things right where they need to be set right.
Well, of course, we also know that these people think that the source of all suffering is Christianity and capitalism. So we realize who's being set up.
And nationalism. Mm-hmm.
Which is really fascism, big government, big business, as the World Economic Forum is saying. It's the public-private partnership. The public-private partnership is the fascism of big government, big business merging, and then they throw in the missing three-legged stool, the third leg being spiritualism, and tying it all back to nature, yes. Pantheism, panentheism, Gaia, Earth worship, Mother Earth, climate change, correct?
And the World Economic Forum has made that very, very clear. This is about saving the planet. This is about honoring the mother. This is about ensuring that we heal Mother Earth, the planet, through climate change mitigation, changing your personal behaviors, Brannon, not just simply your financial, economic behaviors, but even making sure that your worldview aligns. In other words, you need to be a good global citizen as we engage in saving Mother Earth. Because when we save the planet, and I've heard this repeatedly with my own ears as I have attended event after event after event, when we save the planet, mankind saves himself.
ForcingChange.org, ForcingChange.org. Carl Tykrib has been my guest. His book, Game of Gods, you'll find all about it at ForcingChange.org. And we'll post this tonight at WorldViewRadio.com. Take care.
This has been Worldview Weekend Radio with Brannon House. CDs are available by calling 1-800-729-9829. Or to hear an MP3 file of this or earlier programs, go to WorldViewWeekend.com. Views expressed may or may not be those of Worldview Weekend, BCY America, or this station. This program is a public affairs presentation of WorldviewWeekend.com and is heard weekdays on BCY America.